Morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order by the official clock. We're checking on that date. It's 9 a.m. The clock was built. We're not sure if it came with the building or not, our old clock on the wall. So anyway, it's March 27th, 2023. With me today is Co-Chair Senator Hoffman, Co-Chair Senator Olson, Senator Bishop, Senator Merrick, Senator Keel, myself, Stedman. Senator Wilson will be attending today. He's got other commitments. There are two items on this morning's agenda. HB 79, Appropriation Supplemental, Governor's Amendment. They were submitted on Wednesday, March 22nd. So we're going to start off with the supplemental. House Bill 79, if we can have Director of the Office of Management and Budget, Mr. Neil Steininger, come forward and explain to us what is in this budget. I see there's a litany of lifelines on here. We have confidence that the OMB director can answer these questions, but we will extend him a lifeline if needed. And maybe you can start off, Mr. Steininger, about briefly explaining to the public what is a supplemental budget, and why are we taking action on something like this?
Thank you. Good morning. For the record, Neil Steininger, Director of the Office of Management and Budget. So HB 79 is a supplemental budget, and it's a bit of a unique supplemental budget. It's what we refer to as a fast-track supplemental budget. So a supplemental budget is addressing needs in the current fiscal year. So the fiscal year for which a budget was appropriated a year ago, these are needs that have emerged since the time that that budget was initially appropriated. Further, a fast-track supplemental budget is to address, very timely, urgent needs, things that can't wait for a correction in a budget at the end of the legislative session. Normal supplemental budgets tend to pass towards the end of session with the other appropriation vehicles. The fast-track supplemental budget, the items included here are things that are more urgent in nature, directly impact individual Alaskans in a way that require prompter action by the legislature and executive. Okay. So on slide 2, this is a brief summary of the appropriations included in HB 79. There's a total of approximately $5 million in unrestricted general fund, a $3 million reduction in Medicaid services, which is then transferred to the Division of Public Assistance Field Services. So the total need here is closer to $8 million in general fund, just with that $3 million being offset by a reduction in Medicaid. In federal funds, we have about $3.7 million to match to the public assistance general fund dollars. So that transfer from Medicaid, just to note, while I may refer to it as a reduction in the appropriations for Medicaid, it's not actually a reduction to the program itself. It's excess money in that program that we're able to identify to help assist in meeting one of these needs.
Okay, on this slide on that item, you're showing a negative $3,088,000. My understanding is that there's been an acceleration in Medicare claims coming into the state the last month. So can you help us with the estimate of that? If that trend continues for the next couple of months, where would this budget end up? And then if you run short of that, what happens?
Chair Stedman, so the most recent projections that we've received on the Medicaid program show about $10 to $11 million in excess general fund funding within that program. Should there be an acceleration in Medicaid claims or something in excess of the current amount appropriated? And so just for reference, the general fund funding for Medicaid is around $600 million. A $3 million change represents, about a day's worth of funding in that program, or a business day's worth of funding in that program. The outcome if we got to that point either way, would probably be a shortfall in an appropriation if we had Medicaid claims exceeding the amount necessary to, provide for this transfer. We'd probably be seeing it exceeding the appropriation that was made last year anyway. We're pretty confident currently in those projections that we'll have this amount of lapse here available for the transfer. And we don't have any concern that anything would happen with the Medicaid program if this appropriation is made.
Okay. And then maybe if you could, towards the end of the budget cycle before the operating budget leaves the table, make sure you get back to the committee in the event that any shortfall looks like it may appear, we can try to deal with it at the inclusion of the normal slow track supplementals, or prepare ourselves for impacts for FY24 if you roll things forward.
Certainly.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Mr. Steininger. To put a finer point on the chairman's question, when you come back to the committee towards the end of the session, could you then come back and tell us what appears to be driving the accelerated rate of use of the funds? What the driver is?
Yes. Through the chair, Senator Bishop, certainly. We'll provide an updated projection of the Medicaid program at a later point in session.
Okay. Any other questions on slide number two? Okay, slide number three.
Slide number three gives detail to the fast track supplemental appropriations in the Department of Administration. Both are within the legal and advocacy services appropriation. In the Office of Public Advocacy, there's about $3.1 million, and in the Public Defender Agency, about $1.6 million. So these are a combination of effectively two issues. One is to address the base level need for public defense related to changes in the criminal statute under HB 325 passed last year. And the other piece, what's labeled here is contractor rate and cap increase in Office of Public Advocacy and one-time backlog contractor support in the Public Defender Agency. This is to help deal with the backlog in trials coming out of COVID. As the courts reopen trials, there's a large backlog that is driving a large amount of work that the Public Defender Agency and Office of Public Advocacy found they weren't able to accommodate within their existing resources. So this supplemental would ensure that they're able to provide a defense to those accused within that backlog of trials and to respond to any other changes in the caseloads coming to them. We also have the heads of both of these agencies on the line for kind of more specific programmatic questions if you're interested.
Okay, next slide.
And on slide four is the Department of Health Public Assistance. For those watching and who have been following this in the news are probably aware there's a significant backlog in the SNAP program, or the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Payment Program. That program has seen a large backlog that requires that we bring on both contractors and non-perms to work through the backlog. In addition to that issue, we have redeterminations in the Medicaid program that are about to start back up. So during COVID, a lot of the workload related to Medicaid was halted because we weren't able to do redeterminations of individuals on that program. That is going to restart very shortly, and that will require some of those staff that otherwise would be working through the SNAP backlog to begin working on the Medicaid program as well. So those two factors together drive a pretty significant workload need for the Division of Public Assistance. And so to that end, we have about $6.8 million for both the SNAP and Medicaid eligibility determinations between UGF and federal dollars.
Okay. That is your last slide.
And that is the last slide.
Okay, we'll come back to the committee. Any committee members have any questions before we go to public hearing? I guess we're in a public hearing, but before we come to public testimony. Senator Olson.
Mr. Steiniger, one of the main phone calls we get is when we're going to be able to reinstate the SNAP program. So when do you anticipate that the subscribers to food stamps are going to be getting their money essentially? How long do you anticipate that's going to be?
If the chair would allow, I might ask Director Etheridge to come forward to answer that question.
Ms. Etheridge, can you come forward and with a lifeline here and assist Senator Olson in his questions?
For the record, my name is Deb Etheridge. I'm the Director of the Division of Public Assistance. And with dedicated team of individuals working on our, through the chair, with a dedicated team of individuals working on our SNAP recertification backlog, we anticipate that we'll be out of that backlog for 2 months and within this next 2 months. However, we've seen a cascade of backlog in all programs, and we're working right now on the staffing pattern necessary to get us fully out of the backlog.
Mr. Chairman, I want to follow up. So you're telling me sometime in June is when they can anticipate some type of assistance coming to them. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, we have taken several measures to make sure that the backlog does not grow. And there is a little over 2,000 cases that are still in our backlog. And at this point, we anticipate that it's likely less than 2 months, but 2 months to be fully out of the backlog.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Mr. Steiner, could you help us with Section 5 of the bill, Constitutional Budget Reserve section?
Yes, Chair Semin. So the other body added a section to the bill that wasn't in the original governor's submission. When we initially submitted the fast track supplemental bill, it balanced within the projected revenue to the state from the fall revenue sources book from Department of Revenue. However, between that point and the point that this bill was passed by the other body, the revenue projections went down considerably for fiscal year 23. And so as a result, that left this fast track supplemental as well as the other supplementals unfunded. So the other body chose to add CBR, Constitutional Budget Reserve access language to this appropriation bill. That language is necessary in order to ensure that the appropriations here can be funded without some source of revenue specifically pointed to in the appropriation bill, we wouldn't be able to execute on these appropriations.
And then can you help me with line 30? There's a not to exceed $115 million issue within this. What is that, and are you comfortable with it?
Chair Steadman, so that line is effectively, so this bill includes the roughly $5 million in general fund supplemental appropriations. However, when you add in the other supplemental appropriations in the governor's traditional supplemental bill, you get to about $115 million in total supplemental need. And so that language there ensures that those other supplementals are also funded through the CBR access granted in this bill. And so, yes, we're comfortable with that as a mechanism to ensure that all the needs, including things like fire suppression or our Department of Corrections, can be fully funded in fiscal year 23.
Okay. Do we have any other questions from the committee members? Okay. Seeing no other comments from committee members, we're now going to open up the public hearing. Public testimony. We're online for public testimony. I don't see anybody on the list here. Anybody in the room that want to come forward and speak to this bill? Seeing none, We'll close public testimony. Public testimony is now closed. We'll come back to the committee. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the work on this fast track. As I expressed in our committee hearing on the public assistance issue, I think the request to catch up on food stamps and Medicaid reauthorizations is tight. So I hope that the department and the administration, if they find this isn't sufficient resource to get needy people the help they need, will come back.
A motion then?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Senate Finance Committee report out CS for House Bill number 79 Finance, which is Work Order 33GH1063/S as in Sitka, from committee with individual recommendations.
Okay, we have a motion to move the bill from committee with individual recommendations and attached costs. We have objection. Seeing no objection, this bill will move from committee. We'll have a brief at ease. Back on the record. Mr. Steininger, if you can come forward again, please. We just had to put up the next presentation. Do you want to walk us through what your next request is, which is amendments to the budget?
Yes, again, for the record, Neil Steininger, Office of Management and Budget. So this presentation includes amendments submitted by the governor both on March 7th and on March 22nd. These amendments cover both the supplemental, operating, and capital budgets. So slide 2 covers the amendments submitted on March 7th. These amendments are related to the governor's education package. These are appropriations all to the Department of Education and Early Development, totaling $16 million. The first item is $4 million for the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program Partnership, or the ANSEP program. So this is in addition to $1 million that was included in the governor's December 15th budget, for a total of $5 million to that program. There's $1 million for the Alaska Resource Education Center, $3 million for Career and Technical Education Incentive Grants to be distributed by the Department of Education, $3 million for teacher recruitment, retention, and certification support. So this is in addition to a bill also introduced on March 7th related to teacher retention that the governor introduced. And then $5 million for the Alyeska Reading Academy and Institute, including 12 PCNs to stand up a statewide reading academy to help support some of the policy initiatives as part of the Governor's Alaska Reads Act from last year.
Okay, and just as background, can you remind the committee on the timing of the budgets, the deadline for amendments, and then if these amendments are pre or post deadline, and why they wouldn't, if they're post deadline, why they wouldn't have been included, and then also if you know of any other potential requests possibly coming from the administration.
Yes, Chair Steadman. So the normal calendar as prescribed in statute is that the governor releases budget on December 15th and his supplemental budget on the 15th day of legislative session, and then any amendments by the 30th day of legislative session. So that 30th day would have been, I believe, February 15th this year. So these amendments were released on March 7th. after that deadline. So we are requesting consideration outside of the normal statutory deadlines provided. However, the reason that these took a little bit longer is they were part of an overall package that involved two pieces of legislation that were in drafting with our Department of Law to ensure that those pieces of legislation were as well drafted as possible. And the entire package itself was then made ready on March 7th, and so just a little bit past that normal deadline for budget amendments.
And for those watching at home, it's fairly normal, if not normal, for the administration to bring us amendments past the statutory deadline. And we almost always consider amendments clear up to the time that we're trying to print the budget, because there is unknown sometimes that come into the administration, and they could be labor contract negotiations or other unforeseen issues affecting the state. So now, just touch bases on this, if any of this other legislation that is proposed, if it doesn't get to the governor's desk, and will it affect these attached amendments?
Chair Stedman, so these five amendments here are effectively can be implemented independently of that legislation. So when taken all together, they make the governor's education package, but each item itself can stand on its own. So each of these are independently an important piece of an overall approach to education for students in Alaska, but, you know, each individual one does not require those two pieces of legislation to pass for us to be able to implement these. The legislation itself does also have fiscal notes associated with it to fund the pieces inherent in the legislation.
Okay. Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hi, Mr. Seiniger. Good morning. Where will the Alyeska Reading Academy and Institute be located?
Through the chair, Senator Merrick. Actually, might, if with the will of the committee, could I invite up Acting Commissioner Teschner? She might be able to answer that question. I'm not sure of the location.
Teschner, if you can come forward. I know you track the money for the Department of Education very well, so you can, I'm sure you'll be able to answer the question.
Good morning. For the record, Heidi Teschner, Acting Commissioner, Department of Education, Early Development. Through the chair, Senator Merrick, it's going to be based in Anchorage to start, with the potential in the out years as we build the program up to reach more of our rural communities, but in Anchorage to start.
Thank you very much.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, Commissioner Teschner, we used to have a centralized state school called Alyeska. It was in Juneau, but I think I read 100 students at 5 million. The old Alyeska Central School didn't cost $50,000 a student, did it?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, the Alyeska Central School was a statewide correspondence program. This is going to be more of a brick and mortar model. And so this is to build up the program and get the staff hired and provide both direct instruction to students who need the reading support, as well as a year-round professional development for teachers to come in and get that science of reading training.
Follow up. Are you able, or can you get back to us with a breakout of what startup cost versus base cost?
Through the chair, I can get back to the committee.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your view, this the academy does not require legislation to get established?
Through the chair, Senator. No, it does not require statute. We have statutory authority still in existence to have a state-run school.
And as a result of this supplemental appropriation, is it anticipated that this would be an ongoing effort by the state of Alaska?
Through the chair, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Other questions on slide 2? Okay. Number 3, please.
On slide 3 and the top half is covering amendments released on March 22nd to the FY24 operating budget. So these are two items at the request of agencies of the state. They do not impact unrestricted general funds. They are other funds. The first is $547,000 for the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. This is to address salary and benefits for the support staff for the corporation. So this is the non-investment staff. Those have been tracking this budget may recall that we included an increment related to performance bonuses for the investment staff, but upon talking to the corporation afterwards, we realized we had omitted an appropriation for pay increases for the non-investment staff, the support staff at the corporation. So that's what this here represents. In the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, under international airports, we have $691,000 in airport receipts for mission critical incentive pay for the Fairbanks International Airport. This comes at the request of the Alaska International Airport System, requesting that we add this incentive pay for Fairbanks airport workers, similar to those that are paid to the Anchorage International Airport. On the bottom half, we have amendments to the fiscal year 24 capital budget. This is an item for the Alaska or the Marine Exchange of Alaska. They're the organization that do vessel tracking in Alaska waters. There's $1.2 million of cruise ship head tax funds. Traditionally, money has been appropriated from head tax funds for this purpose. For a number of years, we had to omit those appropriations because of the low traffic from cruise ships, resulting in a lower collection of head taxes. However, we have had some of those head tax receipts build up and now are able to make a bit of a catch-up appropriation to the Marine Exchange.
So is there any other uses for that $1,200,000, or does it have to go to the Marine Exchange?
Chair Stedman, so those head tax funds have a federal restriction. They have to be used for things that benefit the individual vessels that pay in that head tax. Marine Exchange is one of the eligible uses. There are other uses for those funds as well. They just need to be things that directly benefit the cruise ships that come into the state.
Okay. Senator Hoffman, you had a question, and then Senator Bishop, I think, had a question, and Senator Olson next, after Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is it anticipated that this would be an ongoing increment, or is this a one-time increment?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the item for Department of Revenue and the item for Department of Transportation, both would likely be ongoing. The salary and benefits for the investment management support staff definitely is an ongoing piece. Mission critical incentive pay, we'll have to determine at a later date if the need is still there. But for the time being, we should consider that to go on for a couple of years. The Marine Exchange item is in the capital budget and would be reconsidered every year as part of that process.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Mr. Steiniger, on this request for the $691 for critical mission pay. You brought up Fairbanks, and it appears that they've been operating below what Anchorage has been getting for critical mission pay. And is there anything in this that's going to make it retroactivity for those workers that have been working below the Anchorage rate?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, this piece is for fiscal year 24, and if I recall correctly, I believe we have this mission critical pay in the supplemental as well. This would be to catch up Fairbanks with Anchorage with the level of mission critical pay.
Senator,
I will confirm that for you.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Steiniger, over the weekend, I got a phone call from the assistant chief pilot there for Northern Air Cargo, and as well as a message that they're having trouble having, the DOT is having trouble because of a lack of operators that are out there. And I see something from Fairbanks here, I was wondering if there was anything there that we could help with the operator situation, the shortage that's out there in rural Alaska, because Kotzebue was shut down for 2 days when a couple of them got sick and couldn't. They had to cancel the Alaska Airlines jets up there, and then when they finally did get the gravel out on the runway for sanding, for braking action, apparently they oversized some of the rocks, and they had one of the 737s sucked up a bunch of rocks and sucked them into the engine there, and so they had a mechanical for a while. So I was wondering, is there anything for the Kotzebue and Nome airport operators' lack of shortage up there as well?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, not in this amendment package. The commissioner of Department of Transportation brought that same need up to my attention and to the attention of OMB late last week. And so we're working with him to get an understanding of what need is there to ensure that we're able to ensure that flights go in that region.
Yeah. Continue, Chairman. So when can I call up there and tell them that indeed the Assistant Chief Pilot for Northern Air Cargo, as well as the people that are in charge, that they can get some relief for some of the operator shortages that we're seeing? Do you anticipate before summer?
Through the Chair, Senator Olson, I'll have to talk to the Commissioner and get back to you. I think the Commissioner of Transportation would be better able to answer that question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While you're talking with the Commissioner, can you see if there's additional need for the whole state of Alaska, not just for Anchorage and for the Northwest, but for all the citizens of Alaska so that we have a system that is working for everyone. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, if you can get back to the committee on that, we've got, I think, Bethel's one of the larger airports along with Ketchikan and other areas, Juneau, for mission critical stuff. Have other questions? Go on to number 4.
Slide 4 covers amendments to the fiscal year 23 supplemental budget. The first line here, $3.7 million in unrestricted general funds, covers judgments, settlements, and claims against the state. There are a total of 5 judgments or settlements or claims against the state totaling $3.7 million, a list of which should be in your packet and is posted on the OMB website. In the capital budget, supplemental capital budget, we have a balance in a prior year department or division of elections appropriation that they are seeking to reappropriate to continue to access for needs to that division. And then the Department of Transportation has identified about $9 million in prior finished projects with balances remaining that they are seeking to reappropriate to use for emergency weather, catastrophic events, and other critical maintenance needs. So, when we have a exceedingly large storm or something of that nature, this provides them an appropriation to go to when their operating budget's not able to, meet that obligation to clear the roads or fix a runway or some other event like that.
I'm sure the capital budget chairman will be more than happy to take a look at the reappropriation to see if he wants to put the monies there or somewhere else. But we'll take those needs that you have identified into consideration in the budget process. Can you please help me with the judgment, settlements, and claims, what they were? You said there was half a dozen of them. If you could just let us know what they are for the public at home so they know what's going on.
Certainly, Chair Stedman, and also online is Corey Mills with the Department of Law, who will have a lot more detail on what these cases actually were. Right. I could list through if you'd like her to.
Yes, if there's a interest from or a question from one of the committeemen or committee persons, we'll refer that to the department. But if you can just let us know what they are, there may or may not be questions.
Certainly. So the first is Wilkerson v. State of Alaska, Department of Law. The total judgment is $1.5 million. Next is Juneau v. Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. This is a Procurement Act contract claim. There are two separate payees on this, one for $586,000 and the other for $214,000. The case of the estate of Aaron Thomas Smith versus State of Alaska Department of Public Safety. The settlement is $300,000. Here's Amarok Resources LLC versus AOGCC, the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. And the total there is $15,300. And then the final is Thompson et al. V. Hebden et al. That is two separate payees, the first being $582,000 and the second being $418,000.
Does any member have a question on any of the settlements? And for those watching at home, in the operating budget every year, we have a section on claims and settlements that's in the budget, and we try to line item amount for clarity with the public funds. But that's how the judgments get paid, is we have to appropriate it after the court's rule. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Steininger, is that the city and borough of Juneau, or is that an office building, Juneau 1? It says Juneau 1. Is that who's
the plan? Let's refer that question to Ms. Mills and the Department of, or the, excuse me, Deputy Attorney General, if she could help us with the Juneau case of roughly $800,000.
Yes. For the record, this is Corey Mills, Deputy Attorney General for the Civil Division for the Department of Law, through the chair, Senator Keel. That is not the city and borough of Juneau. That is Juneau. I think Juneau 1 is the name. It is a contractor, a company that did some a lease agreement with the state.
Thank you.
Okay. And then if you could, Ms. Mills, if you can give us a brief synopsis of the $1.5 million settlement, please. That was the first one listed.
Thank you, Chair Stedman. So this was an employment case. So the employee, Ms. Wilkerson, worked for the Department of Law. Her employment was terminated, and there was an employment lawsuit over that termination. Ms. Wilkerson was successful in that case. So the $1.5 million includes it was a jury trial at the end of the day, what the jury awarded, as well as attorneys, I believe it is the attorney's fees and costs as well.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have any other questions on Senator Merrick? Then Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Steininger, I see some interest rates are at 7.5% and some at 3.25%. What determines the interest rate?
Through the chair, Senator Merrick, I might actually defer that to Corey Mills. I believe it's the terms of the settlement
itself. Ms. Mills, if you can help us with the differentiation in interest rates on settlements, please.
Yes, again, through the chair, Senator Merrick, again, this is Corey Mills, Deputy Attorney General. Yes, those are different interest rates that are set by the court, so it depends on action and the court rule for the case and issue.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you provide me or the committee with the legal defense, how much we spent on all of these cases in a written report? I greatly appreciate that. Thank you.
Ms. Mills, if you can get back to the committee on a breakdown of cost dealing with these separate pieces of litigation in the total, a brief synopsis of each case. Not in lawyer brief, but in finance brief.
Sounds good, Chair Stedman. Happy to do that. And I assume, just to be clear, those are our internal costs on what was spent on these cases,
yes. Correct? Correct.
Okay. Will do.
Okay. Any other questions on minutes? Mr. Steininger, you're back in the hot seat. Do you have any final comments? Do you have, or you know of any surprises for us coming that we need to kind of think about as we try to put the operating budget together that might have not been foreseen the last few weeks?
Chair Simon, thank you for hearing these amendments after the statutory deadline. The administration does appreciate that consideration. Just for awareness of the committee, there are still pending bargaining unit contracts. So as soon as those are negotiated, we will submit a package if there are monetary terms associated with those. So at this stage, that is one item that is outstanding that we'll appreciate the committee's consideration of when those contracts are finalized.
Okay, and then if you could get with the committee staff and keep them posted on a rough range of those potential settlements so we can try to factor those in. I don't know if it's going to be small or large or what have you, but we're going to be trying to put a balanced budget together here and things are going to get a little tight. Any other final comments from committee members today? Okay, that's going to conclude the meeting today. I'd like to thank the department of OMB and all the other departments that were online standing by for lifelines. It's appreciated so we can get the questions answered right away and keep things moving along. The next meeting will be 9 a.m. tomorrow. It's 9 a.m. tomorrow. Senator Olson will be chairing. There'll be three items of labor up. Senate Bill 12, addressing confidentiality program. Senate Bill 57, adult home care medical assistance. And that is a governor's bill. And House Bill 62, Renewable Energy Grant Fund. All three bills will be up tomorrow, 9 a.m. And we are adjourned at 9:43. We are adjourned.